in keeping with our relating tales of the Baal Shem Tov, the following is a fascinating story which took place with the Baal Shem Tov and relates to the Baal Shem Tov's insight into an event that took place many years before. There was once a woman who, Loyalenu, who unfortunately was not blessed with children. She came to the Baal Shem Tov and, crying bitterly, she begged the Baal Shem Tov that the Baal Shem Tov give her a bracha, give her a blessing, that she be blessed with a child. To her great joy and astonishment, the Baal Shem Tov assured her that within the year she would be blessed with a son. Soon after she arrived back home, this lady became pregnant, and 9 months later, she gave birth to an unusually beautiful baby boy. The lady took beautiful care on her son, her only child, and when he was 2 years old, she brought the boy to the Baal Shem Tov so that the Baal Shem Tov should give his bracha, that he should give his blessing to the child at that age. As they entered the room of the Baal Shem Tov, the holy Baal Shem told his shamash to take the baby from his mother and pass the baby to him, something which was very, very unusual, something which was not at all the manner of conduct of the Baal Shem Tov. With great tenderness and affection, the Baal Shem took the baby and he hugged and kissed him, and then told the shamash to return the baby to his mother's arms. But surprisingly, although he showed this great affection to the child, he did not give him a bracha. The mother, however, was happy that the Baal Shem Tov had shown such great affection to her child. They set out homeward, the mother with the child, and on their arrival, after a few days, the child took ill, and Nishtogadach passed away. The woman, as well as her husband, understandably, were beside themselves with grief. The woman returned to the Baal Shem Tov and confronted him and said, "Rebbe, what has happened here? We were more fortunate without having a child than having a child, which was now so cruelly taken away from us after all these many years that we were hoping for a child. Who knows whether we could ever have children again, and this child, which was so precious to us, more precious than our lives itself, was taken away when it was only 2 years old." The Baal Shem Tov told the lady not to cry, and he said to her, "Please listen carefully to a story which I have to tell you. There was once a king and a queen who were childless, and while they enjoyed wealth, royalty, majesty, and the honor which was given to them by all their loyal and faithful subjects, the queen was very, very unhappy. And one day, while walking in the royal garden, she turned to her husband with a sigh. And her husband asked her, 'Why are you sighing so? What is wrong? We have all these beautiful things.' And she said that we do not have a child. And what is all this worth without children?" And so the king began to ponder what to do. And finally he went to his Yoyed Tzoroshi, to his main advisor, his senior advisor, and said to him, "You are my advisor, my counselor on all important subjects. Even when it comes to military strategy, to planning battles, I turn to you. surely then you can advise me on this situation about the fact that we do not have children, we're not leaving any heirs to the kingdom, my wife is miserable, I am miserable about it, what can we possibly do? The advisor said to the king, nobody really can help you in this except for the Jews. The Jews have this special power that they can bring about that you should have a child. Very well, said the king. If the Jews will help me, I will free them from all their taxes and all the tributes that they have to pay me. This will be a just reward for their having made possible that I have a child. That's not the way to go about it, said the advisor. Don't just say that you're freeing them of taxes. Rather, I would advise you that you issue a decree stating that all the Jews in your kingdom must pray to the Almighty that you be blessed with a son within the year. And should they not be successful in their prayers, you will not permit them any more in your kingdom. You will banish them from your kingdom. Their possessions will be expropriated, and they will have to live there forever. Hearing the advice of his advisor, the king accordingly issued such a decree and threatened to expel every Jewish man, woman, and child, young and old, from his land if they did not assure him of a son in the period of 1 year. You can understand the terror that seized these poor Jews. Here they have to get a son for the king and queen who have been childless for these many years. They did all they could. They fasted, they said Tehillim, they recited Psalms, and they begged Hashem, they implored the Almighty that He save them in this time of their distress, in this time when they were being threatened by expulsion from their kingdom of the king. Vatal shavosam el olikim, their outcry reached the heavens, and above their cry was heard. There was a certain very, very lofty neshama, a lofty soul, who heard this outcry and came before the Kisei HaRachman, before God's divine throne of mercy, and said the following, I am willing to undertake this perilous journey and be sent down to the world below. I am ready to become the king's son, and by doing so save the Jewish people from this terrible decree that awaits them. The Baal Shem Tov continued and said, and that is exactly what happened. The queen soon became pregnant, and within the year she gave birth to a baby boy. We can understand that the joy of the Jewish people in that kingdom was truly boundless. When the child became old enough to begin studying, he was introduced to the world of study and the world of books. He was a very, very bright child, and so quick was he intellectually that whatever he would hear at the first time, he would understand it, remember it, and it was totally within his grasp. As the child grew, he became master of more and more various fields of knowledge. And one day he told his father, the king, although I've studied so much and I've mastered so many subjects, for some reason, none of my studies have really given me any delight, any true pleasure. They seem to be limited in some way. I desire to study something which I can truly delight in, which would truly make me happy as I study. His father, the king, who would deny his son nothing, said to him, "If that's the way you feel, my son, I will ask the most senior spiritual cleric in my realm, in my whole kingdom, that he teach you. He is a very, very wise man. And surely, when you study with him, that will give you pleasure, and finally, you will find satisfaction and delight in your studies." The king called upon this highest priest of the land and said to him, "I would very much like for you to tutor my only son. He is a brilliant boy. He has studied so much under the finest of tutors, and he has mastered all these fields of knowledge, but he is not yet satisfied. And I have a feeling that if he studies with you, you being so wise and so knowledgeable in so many arcane fields of knowledge, your knowledge of theology, your knowledge of many other things, that will surely bring some satisfaction to my son." This priest, the loftiest priest, minister in the land, said to the king, "Of course, your majesty, if that is your desire and that is your request, I will be honored to fulfill that desire. And I am ready to undertake the tutelage of your son and to give him as much time as he wants and as he needs. But I have only one request that I have to make of you, and I ask for that request be fulfilled and be respected. 2 hours every day I spend in solitude. I spend in private time in my own room, and that is a time when I ascend to heaven. And at that time, anybody who visits me, and I mean anybody, even you, your majesty, or your son, if they visit me at that time, their life stands forfeit. And so, although I'm ready to give all this time to your son, but these 2 hours of the day are my 2 hours. These 2 hours are of the day when I ask you to forbid your son to enter my study at that time. At that time, no one, and I repeat, no one may enter the study." The king, respecting this priest, said, "Yes, I am quite ready to accept your condition." And within a short time, the king had his son begin studying with the priest, and shortly thereafter, this brilliant young prince was an expert in all the various subjects that the cleric taught him. And he truly began to enjoy studying with this man, and he wanted to learn more and more. This young fellow was not only bright, but as is the custom of bright young men, was very, very curious and inquisitive. And he was always wondering, why is it that he cannot enter the priest's study during these 2 hours? What in the world is he really doing during these 2 hours that make it such a mystery, and everybody is kept out of the room, and under the most severe penalty, his father had told him that you are not to enter the room under any condition? The fact that this was kept from him made him more and more curious as each day passed. And being a brash young man, decided that he's got to take the matter in his own hands and see for himself what exactly the priest is doing during these two mysterious hours. The prince made for himself a set of keys, a duplicate of the keys that the priest had, and he made a duplicate set of these keys to the study, and waited impatiently for the daily period of solitude that the priest had, and finally, keys in hand so that he could open this door, which was always kept locked, with his own set of keys, he opened the door. To his absolute amazement and astonishment, he found the priest sitting in talis and tefillin and studying Gemara, studying the Talmud. The priest was taken in complete surprise and almost fainted with fear. "Oh, you have discovered my secret," he said. "What is going to become of me? They will discover that I am really a Jew." But the young prince solemnly promised that he would divulge to no one this secret that he had stealthily uncovered. "Please, I see you are studying a book in a language that I am not familiar with. This is something I know nothing about. Evidently, you are studying something that you have never taught me yet. Please, I would want to study that which you spend your time in solitude studying. I too want to learn what you are learning. The other things that you have taught me, I have basically mastered." The tutor said to the prince, "All right, I will begin to teach you the Torah. And here at last, I am sure you will be able to enjoy studying something that is so sweet and so intellectually satisfying, and so deep that as much as you study, you will desire more and more, unlike your other studies where you master it and you feel that there's nothing more to be gained in studying it any further because you have plumbed the depths of knowledge of that area." The prince, with his brilliant mind, began to study Torah. He began from the beginning with the Olive Bays, quickly picking up Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh, the Holy Tongue, and started learning Chumash, and thirstily drank further and further and deeper into the waters of the Torah. He imbibed, and he imbibed more, and he finally sensed that he had come upon that true elixir of life, that true knowledge that gives true life and true satisfaction to a student of it. One day, he asked the so-called priest, the Jew in disguise, he asked the priest, "Tell me, please, why do you fool everybody? Why do you go around making the impression that you are a priest when in reality you are a faithful and devout Jew?" An elliptical answer was the response given by the so-called priest. "Most of my years have passed," he said, "and for whatever the reason is, I am obliged to remain in my present situation as long as I live. And much as I'd like to live a life which is not one which deceives others, this is beyond me at this point." The prince, however, wanted more than knowledge. He said to his tutor, "I have studied Torah, and not only do I see the beauty of its intellect, but also the truth of its message. And I've got this burning desire to become myself a Jew. And this is something which consumes me. And as every day goes by, it becomes more and more an object of passion within me. I don't know how to go about it, because you know that my father and my mother cannot bear to live even a single day without seeing me. I am the light of their life. I am the joy and the happiness of their old age. I can't go away from here and just disappear. I surely also cannot convert in the palace and become a practicing Jew. That's another impossibility. So if I can't become a Jew here, and I can't take permanent leave of my parents, how am I to resolve the situation? And becoming a Jew is what I desire with every fiber of my being. That is what I desire most in my life. I want to live the truths of the Torah, not only to study the Torah. Please tell me, the prince begged, how I can get myself out of this situation. There's only one way that I see, said his tutor, that you can do this. You should go to your parents and explain to them that since you are heir to the throne, that you've got such an important position that lies ahead of you, that you desire to know as much as possible about the kingdom and the inhabitants of the kingdom. Tell your dad and mom that since you have not yet seen any part of the country, for the king and the queen had seen to it that the sun was always close by in the palace and he never had yet a chance to travel. And so you tell your parents that since you have not seen any part of the country, you would like to travel about, meet the governors and the rulers of the various provinces of the realm, get to know the populace, the people that live here, and this way you will have a chance to get to know the people and the situations in the realm. Furthermore, tell your parents that since you know that separating from them, even for a short while, is so difficult for the both of you, that in the next month or so, you should space your visits further and further apart, so that they should get used to the idea that you are not constantly in their presence, and they get used to being without you for a day or so at a time, so that it will be possible that you take a considerable time off, so that you go and travel throughout the length and breadth of the country, and that way get to know the people and the situation firsthand. The prince realized that this was truly a wise idea, and probably the only idea that could possibly work. And so he approached his parents, the king and the queen, and he said to them that this is what I would like to do. I'd like to get to know the people. I'd like to travel. But parting is so difficult. Let's separate a little bit of a time until a month passes. And when the month passed and the parents acceded to his request, the young prince set out to visit the various cities throughout the kingdom of his father and his mother. But at the end of this time, when he was at the edge of the kingdom, and when he came to the border, he told the driver of his royal chariot that he go home, because he would be spending quite some time at this place himself, and so there's no need for you to be here. I'll be here on my own for a while, and then you will come back to pick me up in, say, a week or two. The coachman, who was away for a while already from his family, was happy to have the opportunity to go back home and then return. And so he left, and as soon as the coachman had taken his leave, the prince crossed the border into the other country, and with the money that he had with him, a princely sum, he found passage to the nearest large Jewish community, and remaining incognito, he converted to Judaism. With the money that he had, he settled there in that town and spent all his days in the Beis HaMedrash, in the house of studying, learning the Torah which he so thirsted for and so enjoyed, and performing the mitzvahs and living as a Jew which he had such a desire to do. He lived on the money which he had brought with him from his former home, and so he went by year after year in study, in prayer, in charitable deeds, and in performance of other mitzvahs, living like a true Jew, until finally his time came and he passed away. When this holy soul, the Baal Shem Tov continued the story, ascended to Gan Eden, to the world above, the prosecuting angels could not find a single thing on which to accuse him. Who could possibly say, and what could possibly be said about a soul that was so holy and so sacrificial in its being and so lofty that its very descent to the physical world was one of Mesiras Nefesh, of total self-sacrifice, to be born as a child of non-Jewish parents, and all for the sake of the Jewish people who were then in Sakona, they were then in danger and in their peril. Who would dare to find something wrong about a soul who, being in such an environment, nevertheless had within him the ability to spurn royalty and honor and a kingdom in order to convert to live as a simple Jew in a far-off town? However, there was one prosecuting angel who nevertheless did find some fault, saying, "But for the first 2 years of his life, this soul was nursed by a non-Jewess." When this was heard, the heavenly court issued its verdict and decreed that this soul must descend to the physical world once more, and in its new vision be nursed by a Jewish woman for 2 years. The Baal Shem Tov concluded telling his story to the woman who stood before him, and said in conclusion, "Why should it grieve you? Why should it sadden you then, that for the space of 2 years, you and your husband were found worthy of having such a holy child, and you were found worthy of nursing such a lofty soul?"